Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Paul Rudd and Justin Theroux on their new film Mute, underrated comedies, and flatulence. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. Welcome to a classy edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. I'm Josh. That's Sammy.
Hi.
Are you disappointed that I brought together two of the most charismatic men on the planet only to talk about farts?
Yeah, of course I am. This is really exciting for me.
I know, it's a big moment.
I thought you were going to ask if I'm disappointed that you didn't tell me when they were here so that I couldn't sneak a peek, and my answer was yes, absolutely, but then you asked me about their farts instead.
I knew that it was a little too much for you.
I have, like, a weird reaction to Justin. Like, I feel like if I saw him, I'd want to, like, curtsy. Like, I like, wouldn't know how to...
When did the Justin Theroux... Because a lot of people share your love. I feel like... everybody loves Paul. Of course everybody
yes,
loves Paul.
Yes, of course. You marry Paul.
Okay, I don't want to follow up. I think I know what you want to do with Justin. Yeah. But when did that manifest? Was it recent on Leftovers? Was it when
6 feet under.
Oh, okay.
He's got a nice little role in there.
Okay.
Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder's great.
I love him. I've always, like, loved him. But then last year at Comic-Con, I saw him in person for the first time Ninjago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I literally was, like, I wanted to, like, I started, like, moving like a robot. Like, I couldn't. I've never been in the presence of someone that sexually attractive.
Wow. Okay. Well... There's a lot of sexual tension.
Besides Paul Rudd.
Yeah. There's a lot of sexual tension in this conversation.
I can imagine.
Look, when you get three masculine dudes like this together in a room.
You guys talk about motorcycles.
Totes. We actually do talk. Thank you for reminding me. I want to give a little context. At the outset, I bring up fantasy football. And we didn't really get into why. And I want to give context because I'm going to sound like a crazy person. The backstory is... Garrett Hedlund was on a recent podcast. You know this story, but Garrett Hedlund was on a recent podcast, and he was talking about the fantasy football league he's in with basically every, like, big-time superhero. Like, half the Avengers are in this league. Pratt and Evans and Rudd, and it got a lot of press, and I've since run into Garrett a couple times, and I've run into Paul since as well, and basically have caught wind that... within the Avengers community, within this fantastic fantasy football community, it caused a lot of back and forth in a good way. I think it's fine. So I wanted to get to the bottom with Paul. We didn't really get to the bottom of it. I didn't really even get a chance to explain what I was talking about. But that's why I bring up fantasy football in the beginning for context.
Thank you for that. I always forget Paul Rudd's an Avenger.
Well, he's like, because
it's amazing.
He's still Paul Rudd. I said to him, I'm like, I'm surprised. Not only is he an Avenger, he's played Ant-Man by now like 4 or 5 times. I still feel like he's like the new guy.
Yeah, he's like new, yeah.
but Ant-Man, new Ant-Man and the Wasp. It comes out this summer. And this is actually, I was so excited to get this combination. I've never had either of them on the podcast. I've done 1,000 things with Paul, less with Justin. I kind of had a feeling what this kind of conversation would be like, and it turned out to be the best case scenario where it's, not a ton on the movie. It goes off in weird tangents. They're both so witty and funny, obviously. But I do want to mention a little bit about the film because the film is really good. The film is called Mute. It's from Duncan Jones. It's available on Netflix. Duncan Jones, if you don't know, directed the great movie Moon with Sam Rockwell. If you've never seen that, I highly recommend it. Source Code with Jake Gyllenhaal, Warcraft. And this is his kind of pet project. This is a film he's wanted to do for, I think, like 15 years. Kind of the shorthand is it's almost like Blade Runner with a little Casablanca.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's got a real distinct look. Alexander Skarsgård actually is the mute of the title.
Okay.
He's a mute because,
is that why he has the hair?
Sure, let's go with that.
Okay.
And Justin and Paul are these kind of like nefarious surgeons, underground surgeons. There are a lot of twists and turns in this film. I don't want to give away too much, but it's definitely it's not for everyone. And I say this in the conversation, and I think that's a good thing. It's a very quirky, odd, dark, darkly comic at times piece of sci-fi noir. But I do recommend it. I think, you know, based on my description, I think you'll know if it's for you or not. And give it a try. I'm going to give it a try. Right?
Yeah.
And they both have very weird looks in it. I don't know if you've seen pictures of them in this. Like, Paul has, like, these horrible, like, mutton chops. And Justin has this, like, garish, like, blonde wig.
Oh.
Yeah. So they've done their best to ugly them up, but they're still Justin Theroux.
Yeah.
But yes, suffice to say, we talk about that. We talk a bunch about comedies in general, about underrated comedies and their careers. Somehow we get into doing fart noises for an extended period of time. So,
oh, what a treat for our listeners. Yeah, so a special little treat.
I'm not going to take flack for that. I didn't bring it up. I think Paul started it.
Okay, throw Paul under the bus.
Well,
that's real professional.
And I was telling you this.
Oh, my God. Yes, you wouldn't tell me until the intro.
Well, here's a fun kind of New York story of all things.
Let's hear it.
So I did this with Justin and Paul 2 days ago. And then yesterday I'm at a coffee place catching up with a friend. And Paul Rudd walks by, sees me through the window, and comes in. And we had a lovely little another catch-up.
Yeah, was there like anything left to say? You had just had this 45-minute conversation. Did you just talk shit on Justin Theroux the whole time?
It's funny you say that. Literally, the first thing he walked in, he's like, "Justin Theroux is such a dick, right?"
It's like I know Paul. You know,
we all know Paul. Yeah. Paul is exactly what you think he is, and he's just a good guy.
What a treat that is.
It was. As I said to you, I think, and others yesterday, I highly recommend just running into Paul Rudd if you can.
I'm gonna try it.
It really just brightens up your day.
I'm just gonna follow him around until.
No, I wouldn't recommend that.
Oh,
Let
misunderstood.
Him bump into you. You don't bump into him.
Oh, but okay. I'll try it.
The regrettable part is the person I was having coffee with, and you know this person. Mm-hmm. I wish it was somebody that I didn't know that I was like trying to impress.
Yes, that would have been ideal.
It was just wasted.
Completely. It might as well not have happened.
I mean,
you have to tell Paul, like, next time you have an important meeting, you have to tell him when and where and be like, "I need you, buddy."
Yeah, next job interview, something. Oh, my God. All I got was, like, the respect of, like, random coffee patrons.
Yeah. We're like, that was nice of Paul Rudd to stop
to that
man crying alone and talking to himself.
That's right. There was nobody else in the coffee stall.
Exactly.
What else to talk about? A couple of interviews I should point out on the website, on MTV's site that I've done recently outside of the podcast. I mentioned Black Panther last week. By now it is in theaters and it's made a gajillion dollars. But still check out the interview I did with Chadwick Boseman and Michael B. Jordan. That's on the MTV's website, or probably MTV YouTube is probably the best place to find it, or MTV Facebook. And I also talked to Eddie Redmayne. My good old buddy Eddie Redmayne.
Newt Scamander himself.
That's right. We talked a bunch about Fantastic Beasts, and he is he's delightful. And he stars in a fun new family film called Early Man. It's from the Aardman guys, of Wallace and Gromit.
Exactly.
So that's a treat for the family. So check that out. And it's like 75 minutes,
That's it. That's all I need.
Anything else we should say, Sammy, or should we just let Justin and Paul carry the day?
I think we let Justin and Paul carry. There's a lot of fun surprises coming up, so let them just enjoy this for now.
Okay, fair enough. Remember, guys, please review, rate, and subscribe to the podcast. I was saying last week, I have noticed that since we've been mentioning this, we're getting a bunch of reviews and ratings, and almost all of them are actually good.
No way.
Yeah.
Your wife's so nice.
Please, if she had that kind of commitment to the podcast, she actually is listening right now. Please review and rate and subscribe. Please.
Please.
Please enjoy this conversation with Paul Rudd and Justin Theroux.
Oh, you're so lucky.
I am. I'm blessed.
You are.
#blessed.
#blessed.
And enjoy Mute on Netflix. See, I'm quiet now.
That was me doing mute. Yeah.
Oh my God. I don't know if you're about to take
a
selfie in front of
already taping.
Don't you feel it?
Is this live?
There's no. No. Do you not understand how podcasts work?
I've heard of them.
No. Do you ever listen to podcasts, Paul?
Oh, God,
I live you have a Nokia phone. You should have, yeah. be able to
No, I love those. To dial up. I dial up our last podcast. It's on my Nokia. And I like the one.
I really loved Serial. So good. I mean, it's just like the characters are so rich.
So rich.
Yeah, so 2015.
And the sound effects are like.
They've got to reopen that case.
They have to. So have you seen the Jinx?
Did you see what Portlandia did on?
I wish they would make a podcast of the Jinx. Portlandia
did a really good bit on Serial the season. Really good satire.
I always love that sort of NPR sound effects-y, like there's a certain tone of voice that the people who it's like. So I went down to Cracker Barrel, Mississippi, to see someone. And they popped into a little banjo store, you know, and then it's like, and then you hear like,
it's got a distant sound. Like
it's the kind of town,
in the room.
But it always sounds like the person is like, we get it. You're from New York and you're going to somewhere, whatever. And then they go like
Crackleberry,
Mississippi. It's like, it's the kind of town where you might see a kid running down with a stick, you know, dragging it across a picket fence. You know, it's like, well, what are you talking about? Like,
but then again, it also might be a town where you would see a murder.
For those just joining our podcast today, we're sitting in the Crosby Street Hotel. I keep waiting for a parody of The Daily, which I love that podcast, The New York Times The Daily. Have you heard that one? I feel like that's ripe for
satire.
I have not heard The Daily. Which I highly recommend it.
New York Times. Look at this guy.
It has the affectations. I have The New York Times actually on me.
Here we go.
You're so well read. You're so smart.
Oh, what's happening on the cover of the home books section?
There's no home books section.
Well, what's happening in the... Oh, there's a new product I read about on Circuits, in the Circuits section.
Yeah, what's going on?
It's really good.
We're talking about a podcast. David Pogue. So how long have you been into fake news then, Josh?
Yeah.
How am I doing with the Avengers since the fantasy football
I got to go. I'll see you later.
Have you heard about this, Justin?
No, I haven't.
I really brought divisiveness among the Avengers because there's a fantasy football league, which apparently you haven't been invited to. I'm sorry.
Paul knows this about me, that I do not know even how points are scored in football, practically.
Yeah.
At least I'm not the sportiest guy. Points, at least. Not runs.
So you basically are just not into a game played by essentially 20-year-old guys.
I'm not into a game. I'm not into the game that's being played by 20-year-old guys. I'm definitely not into the game played by older guys where you're fantasizing about the game that's not being played.
It makes sense.
That somehow is based on statistics. Well, to me, it's like Dungeons & Dragons, but
it is.
That's cooler.
It's all the same. By the way, doing fantasy football, watching sports in general, whatever, these are all ways to just distract us and get us somewhat just invested to buy time before we die.
Wow. Thanks for bringing us.
That's all it is.
Up. That's great.
That's really what this is. And I, even as a kid, found it somewhat amusing.
I would much rather, go jump in a puddle after it rains. I would so much rather, go out in the garden, put my feet and my hands in the earth and smell the herbs that...
Justin loves smelling herbs.
Yeah.
He's a big herb smeller.
Or just look up every now and again. I never forget to breathe.
Paul never looks up.
Well, it's... in New York, who does? I mean, this city...
I'm talking to Paul Rudd, who's just arrived in New York City at the Crosby Street Hotel.
Am I wrong with you? Do you do that kind of work? Go ahead.
No. Look, I don't want to keep harping on this football thing. But I mean, even as a kid, I thought when I would watch like the NFL Today and I'd see men in their 50s and 60s wearing suits talking about this and think they're at their work. This is their job,
right?
To talk about a game that people who could be their sons are playing. I remember thinking, this is all so dumb.
Should I show you photos of the characters you played in this film? You guys are being pretty silly yourselves.
Yeah, I know.
Do you think people watch it go, here is a man who grew a mustache that's enormous.
You do realize you play an Ant-Man in movies, Paul, with all due respect.
That's definitely a childhood fantasy thing, though. That's more realistic to me. You know, it's like when you get to shoot a gun in a movie, and you think, "Well, if you could have told me at age 11 that I'd get to shoot a gun and have a bloody thing blow up on my chest or have a knife."
Have you gotten to be the guy running around with a gun chasing somebody? And was that a big moment for you?
Not in life. Listen, anything's possible. Exactly. It's only 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so I'm hoping for a big night.
Justin was at the Crosby Street.
And he pulled out a Glock and started running after me.
I think that's a more realistic dream or hope. I had watched the Super Bowl, where I was watching these enormous men with beards and things, you know, and I remember, and I'm much older than them, and I thought, they still look older than me, but I couldn't tell if it was my younger self who had seen those big old, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
And I also still do that, even when I watch like the Olympics, where I go like, yeah, I could probably do that if I really practice.
You were like watching figure skating last night?
You're like slalom skiing. I think like, you know, if I really push myself and train for a couple years, I feel like these old bones could do that.
There are some events that, you know, like, come on, curling.
Curling, I feel like we could master.
Yeah, there's like, what's the age limit on that? Or
there's luge, which seems like you just get into a thing.
That's basically going on a ride. Yeah. You know, you're just riding something.
It is true. People make a big deal out of luge. The truth is, there's no skill required.
Here's your commentary on the luge, guys. Here's the truth.
Although, did you see this story?
Here's how most trainers instruct their lugeists. They just say, hey, do whatever happens, don't sit up.
Don't sit up and don't fall off.
Exactly. And don't try and slow it down. That's literally what they train.
Don't try and be a hero and do anything. Yeah,
exactly.
Did you see the story of this kid? He's in the Olympics. His name's Tucker. Tucker something or other. I think he's 19 or maybe he's early 20s now. He is competing or competed. Didn't win a medal, so he's not that good. Wow. No, he's great.
What sport are we talking
in
about?
In luge. Oh. But this is, I love this story that when he was a kid, he was watching the Olympics, and his dad's like, I want to watch this with my kid to see what he might be into.
Right.
This is an amazing dad. The kid, he's six. He's like, I like that. Like any six-year-old would. And he goes, I want to do that. And then
His dad took his belt off.
His dad, they went to Home Depot and they built a luge track in his backyard.
That's too much love. That's a little too much.
It's incredible. And the track still exists. And because of that, this guy is competing in the Olympics for luge. And what an amazing story.
Yeah, but how many stories
are
like that?
Sorry, guys. Yeah. I wish they'd give gold medals to fathers.
Oh, hey.
Oh, wow. Justin, it's okay. You
know, just because he definitely wouldn't bronze in my book.
But how many dads did that?
That was really good. I wish that was really good, man. You're right. By the way, you're right. Hey, and moms too.
Yeah, let's not forget the mom losers.
Hockey practices, they got to load up the car, mm-hmm. all the equipment.
I saw Italian.
Pick them up from practice. Mm-hmm. Get them to the rink on time.
What are you grooming your children for?
I don't groom my children.
It's too personal. Sorry.
They're old enough now.
Self-reliance. Yeah.
Yeah, I insist they do that themselves.
Do they groom you?
They don't groom me. No. Occasionally, we will sit on the couch, watch TV, and then pick gnats out of each other's hair like gorillas, which technically does count.
Your household sounds like a lice-ridden hellhole.
Well, if they're in school, my kids are in school, and we have. Well, here's the thing: my apartment is filled with mites.
Oh God, it's the worst. It makes them hard. Harden them up young.
Yeah.
So, you're in a movie together.
Yeah, we are.
This is not your first movie together, guys.
It's our fourth, I think, right? Movie.
Did I do the math right?
Yes, correct.
The Baxter, of course.
Mm-hmm.
The Ten, which I have a lot of affection for.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Wanderlust. Mm-hmm. Look at that. Without even looking at it, notes.
Whoa. No, you know that. That's really good.
You're like an encyclopedia of our movies, which is the smallest encyclopedia in the world. Roger Ebert once did a pamphlet on us.
So did Duncan know of this beautiful love affair that was already existing when he...
I don't know if he did, actually.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
I think he learned... once he had sort of reached out to us, I think he learned, oh, they're friends. You know, someone clearly had told him that.
Now, had you guys been... like on the audition circuit together? Had you been up for the same
roles? Paul was infuriatingly on fire from the moment he stepped foot in New York. Is that true or not true?
Couldn't be further from the truth.
Shit. No. You were doing great stuff at a very young age when the likes of me and other people were scrambling. I can tell you this. The first, we were talking about it earlier, the first thing I ever saw him in was, I keep wanting to say 12th Night. It was 12th Night, and you were playing
Orsino.
And I remember sitting there going, where was it, at the Public or was it at Lincoln Center? Lincoln Center. I remember thinking, like, how does a young guy my age get this fucking part?
I knew the director.
Oh, I know you did.
I'd worked with him before.
But it did feel like Paul was always working. And I don't think that's completely unfair to say.
Well, I think that because we both were living in New York, and we were just talking about this earlier with some other actors that were our peer group, and how we have been friends for a long time, and we all kind of were here and doing plays,
right?
And I remember Jessica going, like, God, I felt that same thing. Like, how'd that guy get into David Lynch? Like, that's so badass,
right?
I was just hoping to get auditions like that.
You ever meet with David Lynch? Did you ever get a meeting?
Never met him. Never read for him or anything.
I prevented that from happening.
David, if you take one thing away from my class,
go back to Shakespeare. I was like, listen, you're not meeting my guy.
Listen, this guy was in Clueless. You can never meet with this guy again.
I did. I was in a photograph once. They did, Paramount Pictures did a 100-year anniversary, and there was like 100 people on a soundstage getting their picture taken. And I happened to be standing. I got in it, and I was standing next to David Lynch.
Oh, because it's probably Elephant Man for him was with Paramount, maybe.
Yeah,
right.
I guess. Yeah,
I think so.
By the way,
guess who wasn't in that picture?
Elephant Man.
Poor Elephant
John
Man.
John Merrick
was not in.
Passed on.
Will the hate never end on John Merrick?
He's a human being.
He's not an animal.
I mean, invite the guy for a photo.
They had him in the back, and they were just whipping him with a carny cane, going, get out of the picture, John.
And put the bag over your head. Nobody wants to see it.
That's the one flaw in that movie. He had one hole to look at in that sack.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. What to talk about? Oh, this movie. I really like this movie. I honestly do.
Thanks.
It's from Duncan Jones, as I referenced earlier. What I like about it is, and this is, I think, a good byproduct of this crazy Netflix world we're in now, is like they're allowing movies like this, these passion projects that are, this is a weird movie. It's not going to be for everyone. And I mean that in a good way.
No, like, they'll split people.
Yeah, totally. So I'm curious, like, are you guys, knowing what I do about you guys, I think I know the answer to this, but are you attracted to kind of like unique passion projects when you kind of like, the vision might be crazy. Again, it might not be for everybody, but at least it's coming from an authentic, strong place, point of view.
Yes and yes and yes. But I think, I'll speak for myself, but the thing that I was most attracted to, and I think most actors are attracted to, is talented directors, of which Mark Duncan, one of them. And we'd both seen Moon, and we both talked about this, where we, you know, absolutely love that movie. And so, you know, you file wonderful directors away in your head, and you hope that someday you're going to get to work with them. So when I heard that this existed, and the script was sent to me, I was very eager to read it, and then read it and really liked the character. So it's a confluence of all those things. Right. It's not necessarily whether it's Netflix or that. I mean, I love that there's a home for all these kinds of movies, and there's not seemingly an endless supply of channels for all kinds of creative outlets.
Right.
And it's obviously a very crowded space, but I think it's just nice when I guess studios or channels or streaming services just say, yes, go at it and do what you want to do. I mean, it's been the gripe of most directors their entire lives, which is, you know, you have some, you know, you either have one of three studios sitting on top of you going, get the budget down and here's your notes. Right. So it's nice when a director can sort of.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you guys know it more than I do being in the trenches, but like, I feel like the kinds of movies that you can get greenlit by a studio at a certain price point are getting more and more limited. And like, you know, I think of something like even in your career, like Tropic Thunder, which I always have to bring up because I consider it one of the best comedies of like the last 20 years. Like it's a piece of genius. And like, that was a big budget movie that wasn't.
But I don't think you could do it again. I mean, you know, and that was even then a particular movie in that, you know, we made it for a pretty large budget,
right.
And the scope was pretty big, and it was an R-rated movie. So even at the time, you know, there was enormous pressure to make it PG-13, take out some of the more hard-charging jokes, and so even then we were like, how are we going to get away with this? And there was a single-mindedness in Ben's direction,
right.
Where he basically just said, "This is the movie we want to make." And we waited for a long time to make it. You know, it wasn't like they were like, "We love the script; it's greenlit, go." You know, we basically said, you know, well, if you don't want to make this movie for this price, then don't make it.
Right.
And eventually they came around.
Yeah, because I don't know about you, but like I always gravitate towards like, even if some of these movies don't end up succeeding, and the ones we're talking about have, like Tropic Thunder was a success, but like when like Coppola did like One from the Heart, right? Like when he did like the thing like on like sound stages,
right.
It was mm-hmm. crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I just like it when they go for Cloud Atlas from the Wachowskis. Like, I don't know. I just like it when I can see just like
Jupiter Ascending.
Yeah.
Crazy yeah. Movie.
Crazy movie.
Insane.
Insane movie.
What Eddie Redmayne was doing in that movie, I have no idea, but I love it.
Everyone was doing.
anytime you, a director who has a clear vision of what it is they want to do, it's exciting. It's and whether it works or not, I want to see what it is that they're going to make.
Right.
And to be able to, you know, be a part of something like that it's always an exciting ride.
Do you have films that stick out on your respective resumes that were maybe that fit the kind of things we're talking about or not, but like that still stick in your craw that they didn't find the right audience and that you were clearly proud of them? But
I have one which many people disagree with me on, but I did a movie that David Gordon Green did called Your Highness.
Which was going to be the one I was going to mention.
Oh, really?
Great. Love Your Highness.
I agree. You know, and look, I'm a small part of it, so I'm not trying to toot my own horn here. I thought McBride and Franco were hilarious, and I thought the concept of the movie was hilarious. I thought it was something I'd never seen.
It was like Krull.
Yes. It was like Krull meets Labyrinth meets
yeah,
whatever.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and I thought it was a hilarious movie. And I remember when we went to do press for it, especially with the foreign journalists, it was like we went and sat down, and they're like, "So why do you think this movie is funny?" You know, you'd be like, "I think it's funny because it's, you know," and it was just glum faces like at the beginning of the junket day. I was like, "Oh, I thought we made a hilarious movie," and I still think it's hilarious. Like, if it comes on, I'll watch it. But then I was like, "Why did that?" I honestly don't know why that movie didn't. And I guess it's so sort of piquant, or so sort of it's so tapping one vein that if you don't know the vein they're tapping, then you go, "Oh, I guess it's lost." I even have a theory, which is, because that was pre Game of Thrones. If that movie came out after Game of Thrones, I think people would be all in. There's even a cut scene where, like, I give birth to a dragon.
and it, like, I just think it's removing most movies.
I don't
though.
Know. You do it's that. Just hilarious. But
it's a good way to put it, where you pick one vein. You know that it's such a narrow window, and with comedy, it's really narrow. If you're not speaking that language and you don't get the nuance, like you almost
like
can't.
Fred Armisen does that stuff all the time.
Yeah,
like where
right.
you just go like, "Oh, you were being so overly specific that if I showed this to, say, my mom, she'd think this is a drama." You know, like she would not laugh at a single thing.
Well, you look at like that show that they do, Documentary Now. Documentary Now, which I think is one of my favorite shows, and it's like parodying very niche material.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And some of those episodes almost play like with the one that was like someone dreams of corn or something. It was the Jiro parody episode.
Right, yeah.
But it played almost as like a piece of drama.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That you are.
It's so subtle.
It's so. Also, the one that they do where the Spalding Gray.
Yes.
You know, it's like yeah. what you're going after
totally.
Is so spot on
right.
and so brilliant. It's funny, we were just talking about it too with the Blue Jean Committee just like an hour ago. The people who appreciate it, the ones who appreciate it really appreciate
right.
it, but it's easy to kind of overlook or not really see if that's not your thing.
So for you, you're underappreciated is probably Gen Y Cops. Is that the one?
Well, clearly.
Do you know about Gen Y Cops?
No, what's Gen Y Cops?
Gen Y Paul? Cops. Oh, yeah. Gen Y Cops is...
So it's anything like Crackle and Chill?
It's not... It's It's the same but different.
Okay.
This was a movie that also Maya wanted to do it was for all of those meta reasons, but not for the enjoyment of watching it.
So you got what you wanted out of it, but unfortunately,
what I wanted. I got offered a part in a all Cantonese Asian martial arts FBI killer robot movie that was the sequel to Gen X Cops.
Okay.
Called Gen Y Cops. So this kind of like radical.
They're more radical than Gen X.
Yeah, it's like kind of like and shot it in Hong Kong. And
wait. You told me about this movie when we were in Berlin.
And I played.
He's got blonde hair.
Blonde hair.
I'm Googling right now.
I'm the head of the FBI.
I remember you showing me a picture. And if you're listening at home, you can Google along with me.
Yeah. It's Gen
Y Cops. Was there a language barrier with you and the crew? Like, how did you?
Yeah, but nobody. Oh, yeah. It was like, oh, yeah, but we had like 12 pages to film a day. And no, it was super weird and surreal and great. And, you know, I don't do martial arts, but there was a scene there I was supposed to do martial arts. There was one other guy, one other American in the film, and he did martial arts. And you wouldn't know him. Or you wouldn't have known him then, but a couple of years later, he did gain some notoriety as Afro Ninja. Do you remember that early viral clip of the guy who does the backflip but lands badly and gets up and tries to use nunchucks and he stumbles away? His name's Mark. He's a great guy. That's who I starred in Gen Y Cops. As well as Maggie Q was in it, and Jackie Chan was one of the producers. Whole thing was so so crazy.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's it. Look at that.
That's a memorable head of hair.
It's like
I had to go through several
scalp burning treatments.
Yeah.
Is this enough? No, not yet.
Yeah.
Paul's like, blonder.
Okay. Well, that's amazing, first of all.
It's nothing like Crackle and Chill.
So, relating it to Mute, let's talk about your looks in the film, because
I basically did my Gen Y Cops look at this film.
You lifted my look.
Like, I first met with Doug, and I said, hey, have you seen Gen Y Cops?
Yeah, what are you going
for? Before Paul was attached.
Is this a little like John Lennon-y, but on a bad day?
No, this was not my idea. This was Duncan's vision for both of our characters, which was... when we both got the parts, he said, I want you guys to revisit Altman's MASH. And I want you to look at, you know, Donald Sutherland and Elliot Gould. And that's basically the dynamic that I want to adhere very close to. So the wig was already in process. I just had to get it fit to my head.
Yeah.
And then enter the mud and chops for you.
Absolutely. If you look at, we look exactly like those characters from the movie. That's that, and down to the Hawaiian shirts and the, that was the template.
It's funny because, like, you know, the old cliche is like, as you've never seen them before. But I think that could apply to your characters in this. I've never seen either of you.
Yeah, I don't.
Excuse me. I don't know. Construction outside. But
construction, huh? Okay.
Yeah, huh? Construction in your lower abdominals.
What, did you have a jackhammer for lunch?
Oh, boy. I got to go. I'll see you later.
Bye. This is the part of the podcast where we do fart humor. But what was I saying? Oh, yeah.
That was Paul.
Is that what your flatulence sounds like? All of that?
They call that one Pussy Willow. He names all his farts. That's the mayor.
Because the mayor
has M-A-Y-O-R or M-A-R-E?
Basso profundo.
M-A-Y-O-R. I can't.
The mayor. It's the M-A-H-E-R.
The Mar.
Oh, no, it's the Mar. Talking? I got that confused. The Mar is like the mayor. It's just a bit more political.
Which is weird if you're a mayor, to be more political if you're a Mar.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. So, but I would say that going by the handbook of Hollywood, which there is one, I assume, there's a Hollywood handbook.
Yeah. You haven't shown it to anyone yet.
But when I look at Paul Rudd and I see Justin Theroux, these are not necessarily the kinds of characters, without revealing too much about the lengths they go, that pop up. So that, needless to say, that's exciting for you guys.
Yeah.
It was, yes. It was exciting to play, and it was very... I felt honored that somebody like Duncan would maybe think of me, certainly, to play a role like that.
Is there, at this point in your respective careers, an adjective, a something you see in a script about the character, the potential character you're playing, that is an immediate turnoff that makes you either close the script, throw it against the wall.
I have one for when I read lines that say certain things. When any character says, like, blah, 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 blah. And besides, blah, 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 blah. You know, like,
you don't say that?
No one says, like, you know, should we go out to dinner? You know, look, you should go out to dinner with her. She seems like a good girl. And besides, what else are you going to be doing? You know, like, to me, it's like a hacky writing thing that makes me throw scripts at walls. I'm like, no one says besides.
No one says besides, and nobody ever says another person's name.
As many times.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
a politician. Like, look, Jeff, I told you Thursday.
Yeah.
You got to stop with this.
Yeah, but Paul, sometimes you do read scripts.
Well, Justin, give him a shot for a second.
All right, Josh. So I always notice it when they're using names or not speaking, like you said, the way people talk in life.
Yeah.
So you transform for these roles. How big are you into the Christian Bale Transformational Academy? Like, are you the kind of actors that—
I love it. I mean, like, I love when people, I mean, I think ideally that's what actors are supposed to do. You know what I mean? Is to try and do everything to throw you off the scent of who the actual person is. And it gets difficult when you're someone like Christian Bale, you know, like who's so famous and you have to, you know, but I buy it every time I see him in something that's, full. I mean, just those pictures I've seen of him as Chaney look incredible.
Him in particular, he seems to kind of reserve his own category. I mean, that guy's amazing. I think it depends on the actor and the part too, but
it definitely,
but I love seeing somebody like Daniel Day-Lewis make all of these changes where you can't believe it's the same person.
Right.
And a lot of times that's vocal too, or, you know, it's not necessarily just putting on a pair of funny glasses or, you know,
And yet, on the flip side, I really like and really respond to actors who strip away every external thing. They're not trying to look different. They're not trying to sound different. They are trying to distill whatever it is that they're doing into a few moments that are universally empathetic or relatable. And when all of that artifice is stripped away and it's none of that, that is probably my very favorite.
So what's a good example of that? Is there one that pops to mind?
We were talking earlier, roles we love. I'd say there's something to me that incredibly moving about Timothy Spall's performance in Secrets and Lies. And that is not, even though he doesn't really, I guess, like speak like that or anything, he doesn't do much.
Right.
And I remember seeing that movie in the theater and I was thinking, he's such a great actor, but he's kind of looks like he's coasting through this movie. He's not doing much of anything.
Right.
And you have somebody who's also incredible in the movie, Brenda Blethyn, who was getting a lot of the press about it. But there's a moment nearing the end of the film where Timothy Spall is standing amongst these women that he has, that he loves. He says, "Stop it, stop it, stop it, stop it." And he loses it and says, like, the three women I love the most in my life can't stand each other and I can't take it anymore. And all of this stuff that he'd just been sitting on throughout the whole movie comes out. And I found it to be the most moving, memorable, and resonant performance, I think, of all time for me.
Wow.
That, for me, that's how the effect. And it was an incredible lesson. And I thought, here's a guy that trusts what he's doing, and there's no bells and whistles, none, nothing. But it's working on such almost a subconscious level, I think, for an audience member, that then it everything in this one moment later on, everything that preceded it is justified, and it's incredible. And it's a real actor's kind of performance where I think it's the kind that are easy to miss.
Of course. Yeah.
So that is to me the most thrilling to watch.
Huh? Sorry.
That's a Rumpelstiltskin. He titled that one Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah.
It's three in a row.
It's because it's been sitting inside for 100 years waiting to get out.
I was just using the fart medley to just segue when I didn't have one.
Exactly.
By the way, I'm glad you did because it's got like two real.
No, I love that stuff.
Got two
it's like a station identification for a podcast. We're going to pause now for a quick fart station identification.
Or is
from
it
Hello
like,
Fresh
or
is yeah, it like exactly.
A test of the emergency podcasting system. In the event of an actual emergency, you would be told where to...
I could say in 200 plus episodes of this podcast, this is the farthest one. This is the farthest
one.
Yeah. At least this is the Christopher Nolan one. Yeah.
Christopher Nolan, have you ever been doing a podcast and ever anyone actually farted?
I mean, the law of averages, not that I'm aware of, but I'm sure.
You're not aware of.
I always love a newscaster fart on those blooper reels.
Oh my God. It's the best thing ever.
It's just the best.
It's the best thing ever. The best thing ever is watching news bloopers.
I know. They're just fabulous.
I watched, I'm not even kidding, 2 hours of them yesterday.
What?
Really?
Oh, for sure.
Well, usually around the end of December, they do those supercuts that yeah. just go on best forever. Oh, you think, oh,
the greatest.
My God.
They're the greatest. That is, I really think that might be my favorite thing in the world to watch.
What's your favorite viral video clip? Because I showed one to my wife the other day that I just randomly thought of. It was, and it involves some pain of a celebrity, but it was Kelsey Grammer is walking and he falls
off the stage.
Falls
I've seen
stage.
That one.
Yeah. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, now it used to be like there would be like, it felt like there were like three a year. Now it feels like there's three a day, so it's like.
I mean, there's the old grape one, the grape stomping one. That was like.
Yeah. That's brilliant, which we parodied in Wanderlust.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's
we
right.
We did. Yeah. Yeah. The barking that comes out of that poor woman. Like you could just hear her trying to catch her breath.
Oh no.
Cuts back to the anchors. Oh no. That's great. There's one that I saw in the news blooper that was 4.5 minutes, and it was on BBC, and there was something wrong with the graphic where it just kept breaking news, and it would cut to the anchor who was sitting at the desk, who was just sitting there, unaware that he was on television, not doing anything, just sitting there, and to his credit, he just stayed there, didn't do anything embarrassing, but it was just on him for the longest time, and he was kind of blissfully unaware, and then it would come back in with breaking news and then other shots of like somebody carrying a casket and then back to breaking news and then back to the anchor. And when it goes on for 4.5 minutes and I was crying legitimately tears, and then until finally it ends when he realizes and then says, "Good evening." God, it was
any of them where anyone throws up on live television is always good. Yeah, news anchors that have to quickly disappear under a desk and lose their lunch because they have the flu.
Yeah, there's a few of those right now going around that I've seen recently because they have the Packy One Chip Challenge.
Oh yeah, I saw that one too.
Yeah, so people throwing up. By the way, same with the Cinnamon Challenge.
Oh yeah,
if you've ever the one. Of the woman that does the Cinnamon Challenge, I forget her name, and she did a ladle of cinnamon and can't stop coughing and trying to.
It's a miracle she's not dead.
She is lucky to.
That was like the Tide Pod challenges of the 90s. I mean, really. I mean, we're just supplanting different horrible things.
Well, we're going to end this podcast with some Tide Pod challenges, right? We'll just do it, go around.
Sure. Is this your...
That's my telephone.
Do you know the Cinnamon Challenge?
Of course, yeah.
Do you see? You know the one I'm talking about?
I don't know that one.
Okay.
I mean, I've seen a zillion of them.
Can you pull it up for us in a sec?
Okay. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So, what was it like to write a role specifically for Mickey Rourke in a film?
Fabulous. I mean...
This is Iron Man 2.
There's so many great stories. He's just incredible. He's just, I had to go pitch him the movie, and we ended up getting along very well. I mean, he gets along with a lot of people. He's such a sweetheart. He really is, no matter what he's doing, whether it's an Iron Man or the wrestler or whatever, he just, he wants his lines early. He wants to really work on them. And then he comes in and just executes, and just to have, I've been very blessed and lucky to have many wonderful actors say some of the things I got to write.
Did he have any interesting notes or ideas that didn't make it to the script stage that stuck out
to you? No, not really. I mean, he had thoughts. You know, I mean, talk about a guy who researches a role. He went to, I mean, he's playing a Russian ex-prisoner, blah, blah, blah. He went to Russia, went to prisons, like did the whole freaking thing. I mean, and you're thinking, well, you're playing Whiplash. I don't know if you're not playing Lincoln, but he did, you know, and I just liked him because he has a kind of a seriousness. He just takes everything he does so seriously, yeah. Which I really appreciate.
No, I'm a fan. Yes,
huge.
We obviously know Mr. Rudd is well into the Marvel universe as Ant-Man. I can't believe it's like you've done like five films as Ant-Man by now. Haven't you shot like five different movies?
Two
Ant-Mans.
Eight, nine,
three,
ten,
yeah, something
11,
like that, yeah.
Two or three Avengers or something like that,
something
right?
Something like that.
It's crazy to me. Well, what I was going to say is there were rumors, I remember at one point, for you, Doctor Strange, Justin.
Really?
Do you remember that being like any truth to that? Was there
I remember catching wind of it, but there was never any communication about that. I think they had who they wanted in mind, which was fabulous.
Yeah.
I loved that.
So does Ant-Man still feel like you're just getting it sorted out, or does it now feel like you have played this guy a number of times?
No, I feel like I've played him. I feel like it's the newness of it all is gone. As far as knowing the world and the part and all of that,
sure.
But the novelty of it, and certainly the surreal nature of kind of being a part of that world and seeing other actors in their costumes and stuff, that never went away or has gone away. And so, it's a strange thing to be a part of something that's so worldwide. And just huge.
I mean, has it changed? I mean, you were recognizable before Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Does it feel like it's another level of you have to kind of
it
go
feels
to other?
The only thing where it feels different is that kids didn't know who I was as much as they do now.
Right.
So, like my kids, they're friends. They're like, you're Ant-Man. I go to pick up my daughter at school. She's in second grade, and kids in her class are like, are you Ant-Man? That's weird. Second grade, when my son was in second grade, I didn't go pick him up, and they would say, wait, were you in the 40-year-old virgin?
Children pointing at Justin being like, your highness.
That never happened.
The leftovers.
Yeah, exactly.
That mostly kindergartners in the first grade were the leftovers, yeah. You're the guy that cries on the leftovers. That's a really morbid take on spirituality. I'm like, you're in second grade. Why are you?
Did they ever let you read the entire Avengers script for either of these last two? Did they let anybody read the entire scripts for those movies?
They give it a word at a time.
Yes, they're
no,
like,
they're pretty. They kind of play it all. They're pretty private about that stuff.
Is that tough for you as an actor, or can you feel? I guess you just have trust.
Well, I was able to read. I was able to read. I was able to read stuff, and. I don't think that it was really they were trying to be secretive from us about certain things at all, or not let us read anything.
It's just I think literally they, security
but I mean, just
it's
security like, as yeah. far as like you put anything you print anything out, you leave a script anywhere that gets picked up, and now there are people whose job it is to try and find stuff out. Put it all out there, and right. That's a drag.
I don't even know why that job exists. Like, what's the point? Who cares? I mean, like, don't you just? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, they somehow kept your part in Star Wars pretty quiet.
Yeah, I didn't even tell anyone. I mean, I it was one of those things where I mean, again, it's a cameo. So it's not like a. And when I got the script, it was literally like a black page with my line. everything else was redacted. I mean, I knew roughly what the storyline was, but. But yeah, I mean, they're the same way. I mean, they're so secretive. I mean, even when you're on a studio lot, you're walking around, with a sheet around you, and an umbrella or something. It's
yeah, that's true. That's right. Yeah, when you go on, and you're in your wardrobe, it's putting a cape around you. There are photographers everywhere, and
it's crazy. So, can you tell me? I'm just curious, Justin, like how that one came about. Did you know Ryan or was
no?
That...
Ryan, I guess, wanted to have a meeting with me a year or so before. They started. I think the script was just coming together, and we had one of those incredibly awkward lunches where he said, "Hey, I really like you, and I would love for you to do this. I can't tell you anything about it. I can't tell you what it is, but I can't make any promises. I hope it works out." And I said, "Great." never heard from him again. Then as they were sort of gearing up to start, he reached out to me again and basically just said, look, the part that I had in mind for you has been so reduced because I've had to service all the other characters and whatever. And from inception of the idea to execution of the script, I think obviously he had a different, you know, once all the forces came together, it became a much different thing. And he said, now it's really just a cameo, you know, at this point. And he said, would you be interested? I'd still love for you to do it. And I was like, of course I would love to do it. So he brought me in, and I just went to London for 3 days and had a blast, saw some friends, and shot it, and yeah.
Have you been petitioning JJ for a larger arc for Master Codebreaker?
No. I mean, like, I think, you know, it is one of those kind of, like, things where you just go, like, I can't believe I'm on this set. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the franchise from early on and from the first one. And so, you know, to... I just thought it was, you know, it is one of those, like, bucket listy. Yeah. I mean, my God, who wouldn't want to do it?
It's interesting. I mean, like, thinking about, you know, your two careers in parallel, like, I feel like something you guys do share is that you've been able to kind of lead a couple different lives, in that, like, you both have written films that you've been in or not been in. You've been in ginormous kinds of movies that we've been talking about, but also independent films. Like, I'm curious, like, and also the comedic side. You both clearly have similar temperaments in comedy and embrace kind of, you know, subversive comedy in a big way, but are still able to kind of do things like Mute. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, like, did either of you ever feel like you were going to have to make a choice? Was there a concern, like, I'm going to have to give up one side to service the other?
I think that's kind of a... you know, the idea that you have to just do one thing is kind of a misnomer. And I've definitely tripped up some stairs and been lucky in certain areas, and then worked hard on other things. And then, I think usually, at least, and Paul's, I think, the same way. It's usually you sort of just gravitate towards what you think is quality, and if you adhere to that, you'll have a varied career. And that might not even be acting in something. There's things that I've written where I've been like, I could put myself in it, but I actually think it's better for this person, or that person would actually be better in that part than I would, you know, like, so I think as long as you're sort of always, if you're patient enough to wait and go, you know what, I understand that that's a good director, but I don't really like their movies or what they do. I'd rather not do that. Whenever I've made a career decision that I said, like, I'd be smart to do this.
Right.
I always am miserable, you know, and whenever I make the decision of, like, you know what, that'll be fun, you know, or that is interesting to me, or then, or this script is great. You know, they don't always come out great, but at the same time, or they're not always big successes, but I'm usually happier in the making of the thing. And I think, you know, following your gut has paid dividends for me, you know, creatively.
Yeah, that's a good point about that you've enjoyed the making of it, because when you do it, we've been doing it, both of us have been doing this for a while now, with each year that goes by, the actual enjoyment of the making of it becomes more and more important.
Right.
And even more important than the reception, because there's things that I've had a blast on, and they're not big box office hits, they're not, or were never designed to be, but I really do like it.
Well, you also have perspective at this point that, like, you're going to have a career. And you may not, you know, be Tom Cruise tomorrow, mm-hmm. or whatever, but you're going to still have opportunities. So you might as well enjoy the process of working with people you like, and not sell your
life's
soul to the devil.
Well, also, we both, I know this about Justin, and I feel the same way, which is, you know, the quality of the stuff that we're working on, you never know how they're going to turn out, but that is hugely important to us too. I mean, we want to be in things that we'd want to see. We'd want to be in things that have some sort of artistic integrity and speak to us in some way. As far as kind of staying in this comedic lane that I have for a long time, it's like that, I think at the end of the day, that really is the most fun to work on.
Right.
And I'd want to see that stuff probably more than other things. Just at this moment in time, it's like, mm-hmm. I'd rather just watch it. If I'm gonna watch a movie at all,
right?
Give me something just funny,
mm-hmm. or two hours of news bloopers.
Yeah,
that's it. By the way, I'd rather watch that than a movie. I want to watch news bloopers.
I want to watch. People always ask me, like, what's the funniest movie? I'm like, if I had to go laugh for laugh, like, what is the movie that I've laughed throughout at? It's usually like a Jackass movie or something. Yeah. Like mm-hmm. I consistently will laugh through the entire film and love it, you know. And it's not brilliantly structured, snappy, comedic dialogue. It's just, you know, people getting kicked in the nuts.
Not wry comedy that you're raising an eyebrow to.
or that there are other movies like MacGruber or even I think a masterpiece. Yes. And there are several movies. I mean, that I can think of, Hot Rod or.
Popstar was amazing.
Popstar is incredible. But and same with some Sasha's movies, where you just see some, like, these people want to make you laugh, and there's a lack of pretension that comes with that, especially the ones that don't work on every level, like when there's so many jokes, and you know you could pick holes in them and say, well, this doesn't really work, or this isn't that funny. It's like, well, maybe not, but these other ones are hilarious. And when that is your goal, there's an element of not taking yourself seriously, I think, in movies like that, that I find to be really endearing, and I root for those movies and I love watching them. My favorite comedies are the ones that are flawed as actual movies.
Right.
But I think the inherent joy that they're having of people trying to make me laugh is just clear.
Should we end with a round of fart noises? Justin wins.
That's it.
What's that one called?
That one's called The Phantom.
Congrats on the movie, guys. Good to see you both.
Nice to see you. Nice to see you. Would you really just end it on farts?
It's the best. Only for you guys.
Good seeing you again.
Thanks, guys.
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.